Today on Straight Talk Africa, May 25th is observed by several countries and the diaspora as Africa Day. Some celebrate the event with calls for justice, development, dignity, freedom, and Pan-Africanism, and others consider it a time to reflect on the failings of their country's leaders. That's coming up next right here on Straight Talk Africa. Hello, welcome to Straight Talk Africa, live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali.
Hello, Shaka, and hello to all our viewers and listeners on the continent and elsewhere. I'm Ayan Bior, your social media reporter.
Today, it's a discussion on the significance of Africa Day.
And coming up later, many of you have weighed in on our topic through emails, Facebook, and Twitter comments, and we'll reveal some of them ahead on Straight Talk Africa.
Each year, May 25th is observed by several countries and some interest groups in the diaspora as Africa Day. My colleague, Paul Sisko, has more.
May 25th, the anniversary of the founding of the Organization of African Union, the OAU, in 1963. But it was Dr. Kwame Nkrumah convening the first Conference of Independent States 5 years earlier that set the stage. That first Pan-African Conference on African soil was called to express Africa's disgust with colonialism. Under its first chairman, Emperor Haile Selassie of Ethiopia, the OAU established African Freedom Day to mark each year the onward progress of the liberation movement and symbolizing the determination of the people of Africa to free themselves from foreign domination and exploitation. Emperor Haile Selassie saying, "May this convention of union last 1,000 years." The OAU provided weapons, training, and military bases to rebel groups fighting white minority and colonial rule. In 2002, South African President Thabo Mbeki oversaw the disbanding of the OAU and the establishment of the African Union.
To make a pledge to the peoples of Africa and the world that will honor the commitments we made as we agreed to establish the African Union.
Africa Freedom Day, African Liberation Day, the 25th of May, is celebrated to various degrees in various ways in Africa and around the world every year.
Africa is going to be really, really the future of the world.
But not everyone agrees with the musician's optimism.
A lot of millions of Africans are suffering on poverty. The children are dying. And the leader, they are not looking about it. So African, they have nothing to celebrate.
Well, I don't think there's anything to celebrate because considering ever since the day we got independence as Africans, we ended up colonizing our own selves. I mean, take an example of Museveni, Uganda, Mugabe in Zimbabwe. I mean, there's nothing to celebrate in Africa. We have all this and everything, but we can't actually utilize the resources and whatever the colonizers left us with. Our own leaders are colonizing us now.
African unity can only be achieved through will. It's a dream to see Africans lift themselves up. We need to encourage good governance, help our fellow citizens. It can only be done with complete devotion and the will of Africa's youth.
The African Union member states continue to meet in Addis Ababa, seeking to mend their own political divides. But the dream of its forefathers and African unity is elusive. And the question remains, to what extent does the institution resonate and benefit the people of Africa? Paul Sisko, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Paul, for that interesting report. Joining us here in our VOA Washington studios are two distinguished guests. Dr. Arikana Chihomboli Kwao, the African Union Ambassador to the United States, and Dr. Awet D. Welde Mikael, Associate Professor of History at Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, in Canada. Well, gentlemen, I have to say frankly that I am profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host you on Straight Talk Africa.
Thank you, Shaka.
You're most welcome.
Thank you for having us, Shaka.
You're most welcome, especially for you. It's the first time that you're appearing on Straight Talk Africa.
That's correct.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you.
Well, I have to point out, by the way, that Nikaya is also you are basically a Queen's National Scholar of African and world history.
Correct.
Very interesting. We expect to be joined by Dr. Kumi Naidu, Director of Africa's Rising Movement for Justice, Peace and Dignity. He was also, of course, a Rhodes Scholar at Oxford University. He will be joining us from Durban, South Africa. Well, let me come to you immediately because we do have some technical problems, so we probably won't be going to the phones. First of all, this must be a very, very important day for you and for us.
Yes, indeed.
Why is it so important? What is Africa Day, really?
Well, it is time for us to reflect and pay tribute to everything African and take inventory of where we have been, where we are, and where we would want to be.
And it is very interesting, by the way, that today happens to also be a program celebrating the independence of Eritrea. 26 years, today or tomorrow?
Today.
Today.
Yes. Well, first of all, thank you again for having me, and it's such a privilege, Madam Ambassador, to be sitting with you on such an important day for me, both as an Eritrean and as an African, to be represented and be sitting next to her. So thank you for the honor and privilege, Shaka. Yes, today is Eritrea's independence, 26th independence, and it also is Africa's Africa Day. And it's significant in multiple ways, not just for me as an Eritrean, but also for me as an African. And why Africa Day is important is the significance of Africa is not just that it's a geographical expression. Africa is a sum total of the lived experiences and visions and ambitions of its children. And as Madam Ambassador has pointed out, it's a day to pause, reflect on the accomplishments of these proud children of the continent, and face the challenges that exist today and that may feature in the future. So that's an important event for us.
And as you reflect, do you find reason to be very proud?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm very proud of my African heritage and African accomplishments of my forefathers. But I'm not blind to the weaknesses or failings of the past as well as present generations of Africans. So my pride does not blind me to our weaknesses.
I see. Very interesting. Well, Dr. Kumi Naidu, are you there?
Yes, thank you. And good to meet with you and your panel, and greetings to your listeners.
It's a pleasure, of course, especially given that you're joining us from Durban, South Africa, a place, of course, where there was once a great king, Shaka the Zulu, and also a place, by the way, where someone who looked like you, a very young barrister, cut his political teeth, and that is Mahatma Gandhi.
Hi. Well, you're the first person to say that I look like him, but I'll take that.
Very interesting.
Yes, you cut his political teeth here, and as we say to our friends in India, you also sent us a lawyer, we sent you back a Mahatma.
Very interesting.
Which is, awesome.
Very interesting. Now, talk to us, of course, you know that we're going to be celebrating Africa Day tomorrow. And it also happens to be very coincidental that you too happen to be launching what you call Africa's Rising Movement.
So firstly, just to say that it's not coincidental at all. We chose Africa Liberation Day or Africa Freedom Day as the day for the launching of a new Pan-African social movement called Africans Rising for Justice, Peace and Dignity. What we say is building a movement from below and beyond borders. And we have chosen red as the color of mobilization. And we chose red to honor the blood that people spilt for the liberation from colonialism and apartheid and so on, but also to draw attention to the bleeding of Africa's wealth on a daily basis through what are called illicit financial flows from the continent. And so tomorrow we expect in about more than 40 countries to have activities which will signal the formation and the birth of a new movement that is determined to hold our leaders to account and to put pressure on the international system that holds the people of Africa back.
Humi, any particular reason why you have what you call the Arusha Declaration, which reminds me, of course, of another Arusha Declaration back in 1967?
Well, there's some historical connections, but just to say that, yes, the meeting where 44 African countries came together in August last year in Arusha, Tanzania, that founded the sort of logic of this whole movement. And the declaration is the Kilimanjaro Declaration, and we invite people in the African diaspora and people all over Africa to sign the declaration as an indication of wanting to support this movement, and then, you know, people get involved. The Kilimanjaro Declaration is just a one-page declaration. It's very simple. It basically tries to recast the narrative of Africa, where we start by saying that Africa is a rich continent. We are the richest continent underneath the ground. And some might argue that's precisely why we are one of the poorest continents above the ground, what is sometimes called the resource curse. The Kilimanjaro Declaration commits us to working against corruption, shrinking democratic space, poverty, inequality, gender equality, and the impacts of climate change and environmental injustice. So those are the kinds of things that the Kilimanjaro Declaration commits this new movement to focus on. And additionally, there are two other points that I should say. One is that we are very committed to putting young people at the center of this movement. We believe, as the youngest continent on the planet, in terms of that disconnect between the average age of the population and the average age of our leaders. Sadly, almost all of them, with one exception, is a woman. All of them are men. And we are wanting to really say to young people, do not accept the slogan or this verb which says young people are the leaders of tomorrow. Given the impacts of climate change and so on, there might not be a tomorrow for young people to take leadership. And there's a very deep commitment to new ideas that we hope young people can bring to public life. And secondly, we are saying that as a movement, we are committed solely to non-violence, but we will do so forcefully and with courage. So that's what's in the Kilimanjaro Declaration.
Very interesting. Before we pause for a short break, we want to remind you that Straight Talk Africa is now streaming on Facebook. Just enter the keyword Straight Talk Africa and watch our show live, and don't forget to share it with your friends. Also, we are on Twitter, so follow us at VOA Shaka. That's VOA Shaka. We'll be right back, so please, don't go away.
Able to touch on things that are important to people on an everyday basis. We hope that our viewers are getting inspired when they watch our show. They're getting a view of the world from a different perspective, things that perhaps are not in their immediate vicinity. Today, I could put in on the show something that is a little different, a little unique, and this gives me that inspiration to come to work.
topics could be French,
English,
Portuguese,
Bantu,
Arabic.
It is the bit.
The African bit that counts.
The bit does all the translations.
It cuts across all languages and gives us the understanding that this is the African bit.
It is so distinct
and adhesive.
It binds us together.
African Beat on the Voice of America. For more information, visit our website at www.voanews.com/African Beat.
Thank you very much. Of course, this is Straight Talk Africa coming to you live from Washington. Let me come to you, Dr. Alikana Chihomboli Kwawo, Plenipotential Extraordinary. And you also, by the way, happen to be the only doctor here. I realize almost everybody here is a doctor, but you seem to be the only doctor with a real clinic. Now, tell us about what you're planning to do tomorrow to celebrate the Africa Day.
Tomorrow is Africa Day, and it is a day that's being celebrated by Africans all over the globe, and we are no exception. We are having, starting at 10 o'clock, events, panel discussions at the Woodrow Wilson Center. And then at noon, we are going to be launching our own internet radio. So we're having an event there at the Mission in Georgetown. And then in the evening, we have a gala dinner where we are going to be celebrating everything African.
Very interesting. You talk about African celebrating, but I haven't, frankly, seen any invitation so far.
Oh, you didn't get an invitation. I'm sorry, Shaka. My apologies.
Very interesting.
We'll have to do something about that.
No problem. What about you, Professor? You really think that this is something that should be celebrated in the manner in which the ambassador is saying?
Yes.
Why?
Well, let me step back and follow the conversation from on my earlier segment. Africa is a rich continent with a very long history of civilizations, of human development, of resources, both natural and human, going to the present. Africa is a continent where the people have rose up against oppression and exploitation by foreigners as well as domestic oppressors. So this is a continent that has so much to celebrate, but at the same time, a continent that has so much to overcome. So when we are celebrating Africa Day, like I said earlier, it's not just a blind celebration to a past glory. It's a celebration of past accomplishments and also a moment to reflect on what these challenges are, look each other in the eye, and commit to walk together and overcome these challenges. So when we say we are celebrating, we are not just going into a frenzy of euphoria. It's a solemn celebration because, as some of your guests in the opening clip were saying, the challenges we have in the continent, across the continent and in individual countries is enormous. But it doesn't mean we stop and allow these challenges to paralyze us. And that's where what Kumi has been telling us about the African Rising Movement is very inspiring. This is a continent of such inspiration.
You know, there are some people who say, and with some justification, that the OAU, the Organization of African Unity, that accomplished its mandate, which was, of course, with 1994, the end of apartheid and the independence of South Africa. Africa had been decolonized from European colonialism. But as you saw in some of the package that you watched at the beginning, there is a sentiment that, yes, European colonialism may have come to an end in 1994, but there is another type of colonialism that is reflected among some leaders on the continent, that these people who, in fact, may be indigenous to Africa are, in fact, playing a sort of colonial role, even though, in their words, not mine, are probably even playing it worse than European colonialism.
Madam Ambassador, should I or would you like to take a tack at it?
I will attempt to answer that. The problem of Africa is multifactorial. It's very difficult to look at the issues to do with Africa and apply all of them to the whole continent.
Mm-hmm.
Different regions, different countries, the issues are different. I'm not going to oversimplify here, but let's look at Africa as a family. Let's break it down to your own family. Born of the same mother and father, mm-hmm. and yet we are so different. And me as a mother of five, how I approach one child is going to be different from how I approach the other child. There are a lot of good news coming out of Africa today. And let me remind our audience that we cannot continue to paint Africa with the same old raggedy brush, because there is change in Africa. Yes, we have some leaders that need to do better, but we also equally have a lot of leaders who are doing very well in Africa. Let's take, for example, a country that I like to speak of, Rwanda. Rwanda, yes, some might say President Kagame has overstayed, he needs to go, but let's look at 23 years ago. Rwanda was in genocide. 23 years later, Rwanda is one of the most well-run countries in Africa. Rwanda is the only country on earth with 64% female cabinet.
Are they elected or appointed?
Elected. No country comes even close. There are a lot of good news coming out of Africa. Let's take a situation like Rwanda. Then others might say Kagame needs to go. But precisely because Kagame has done incredible work in Rwanda, that's precisely the reason why the African leaders have appointed him to lead the reform process at the African Union. Why? We have a member of the family who's getting it right. So why should we get rid of him? Instead, we need to say, whatever you have done for other countries, for your people, we want you to also help us do the same thing for the rest of the continent. I'm saying what works for Rwanda may not necessarily work in the DRC, may not necessarily work in Zimbabwe or in Egypt. The issues of Africa are multifactorial, and we need to address them from one country to the other. However, we also have this general understanding of what is expected of the people, hence Agenda 2063. Agenda 2063 is a program agreed upon by all heads of states after consultation with the citizens of the continent. And we're now down to the seven aspirations of the African people. That's the yardstick through which the African leaders are measuring their progress in their countries. Are we there yet? No. But it is a process. The fact that our leaders are coming together and meeting twice a year, reporting to President Kagame about the progress in their own countries, that is huge. When you look at a continent of 55 countries, that's no easy task. That is a tall order. But we have to start somewhere. It was refreshing for me to sit and listen and be part of the African peer review mechanism, where the leaders were getting up and giving progress, self-analysis in their own countries, and giving themselves a failing grade in terms of their progress in their own countries based on the seven aspirations of the African people. It is a conversation. This is a path. We have started. The journey of 1,000 miles begins with the first step.
I see.
The African leaders meeting twice a year, discussing progress in their own countries, that is the beginning. They have taken the first few steps, and we can't continue to pull Africa down. Let's talk about some of the successes. Let's talk about some of the good news coming out of Africa. Are we there yet? No. Do we have issues? Absolutely. But the conversation has started, and I think we are on the road, on the right path with the African Union. And to me, it is refreshing with what I know and what I've seen to see the African leaders coming together and articulating that which is needed in Africa and making a commitment to do better.
Professor Awet, is Rwanda a remarkable example here. A country, frankly, where all the reports clearly indicate this is a country where there is no such a thing as even a semblance of freedom of expression. In fact, you don't even have elections there. You have selections to such an extent that even the European Union is not sending a delegation there for the August elections.
Well, we can take every individual African country, and it's a mixed bag, right? But we've got to that point where we say, yes, we are aware of our challenges, but we also have to give due accord to our accomplishments. So as Madam Ambassador was listing, 23, 24 years ago, Rwanda was a country at each other's throat.
I covered the story. I was in the front line.
Absolutely. I know. Mm-hmm. I know. So it's important to celebrate how far we have come, not just how far longer we have to go. So it's necessary to remind ourselves of how far we need to go. And on that note, let me step back to your earlier question of the Organization of African Unity, the predecessor to the OAU running out of its mandate. As a historian, allow me to step back and share the story that you probably all know, especially Madam Ambassador. I would be repeating the story that you're intimately familiar with. Organization of African Unity was initially born out of a compromise, of visionary Pan-Africanists like Kwame Nkrumah.
He was surgical.
Who wanted automatic union while others wanted to celebrate, enjoy, and explore the limits of their individual countries' independence. So this African OAU, or Organization of African Unity, was a compromise or a stopgap measure until that moment when all African countries would, with a single voice, aspire and work toward a union. 40-something years later, was it in 2002 that the Organization of African Unity was deemed it has run its mandate. And the mandate was complete liberation of the continent. And you're absolutely right. With 1994, the end of apartheid in South Africa, we reached that transition phase that Africa, before we talk of unity, let's talk of liberation. That liberation was accomplished. And 8 years after the accomplishment of that liberation, African leaders said, okay, this is the moment when we start laying the bricks for a union. Is it full, perfect union? Far from it. But we start with one step for that long 1,000-year-long march that Emperor Haile Selassie spoke about at the formation of the OAU in 1963.
You know, I am wondering really whether when someone looks at the effectiveness of a country that, for example, is good at service delivery and yet denies its own human beings civil liberties and what have you, I am wondering whether, in fact, service delivery and democracy are mutually exclusive. Are they, or mutually reinforcing?
They're not necessarily in a binary, either way, reinforcing each other or neutralizing each other. But when we speak of service delivery as in delivering services to your citizens, many African countries are doing it. Are they doing it to the extent that we as African citizens would relish, would enjoy, would prosper? Not really. We have a long way to go. But this is an important fact to reflect on as Africans. This massive continent with so much human and material and mineral resource has been painted with a broad brush, historically speaking, for various reasons, as a continent of lazy people, as a dark continent, as a continent of wars and famines and what have you. We are sick and tired of that. This continent is, as Kumi has said, this continent is very rich in human resource. It is the youngest continent in terms of demography. The future is in Africa in terms of resources. And so are we doing well Far from it. My own country, Eritrea, I celebrate my country's independence, but we face a lot of challenges, both homemade and regional, as well as international.
I hate to say it, but time is not our best ally. You are tuned into Straight Talk Africa. We'll have more of a discussion in a moment, including our social media segment. So please, don't go away.
And not just the next generation of African leaders, they are today's leaders. And this is the time to invest in them. Today, not tomorrow. So let's connect. Let's engage with each other on issues that will transform our societies. Innovation, leadership, entrepreneurship, things that you're doing to move the continent forward to make you the greatest generation that Africa has known. It's Upfront every Wednesday, 17:30 UTC, right here on The Voice of America.
Voice of America. 1,500 hours
of news and information.
Educational and cultural programming.
To more than 134 million people.
Worldwide each week.
Listen to us on radio.
Watch us on television.
Follow us on Facebook or Twitter.
And through your mobile device.
VOA.
We're dynamic and consistent.
In bringing you
the most reliable information in 43 languages.
Tune in. You're tuned into Straight Talk Africa. And here is, of course, Ayen Bior. Ayen?
Thanks, Shaka. Africa Day commemorates the creation of the Organization of African Unity on May 25th, 1963. Nearly 40 years later, the OAU was replaced by the African Union. Well, this leads us to our question of the week, which asks, how significant is the African Union? Well, before we begin, I'd like to thank all of you for using our social media platforms to communicate with us. Just use the hashtag VOA Africa Day. And if you haven't yet, please follow us at VOA Shaka. And speaking of it, let's kick off the conversation with a tweet from Emmanuel Kachele. He writes, the African Union has failed to handle a wave of political turmoil. Excuse me, I'm sorry about that. Emmanuel Kachele writes, the African Union works well with economic and cultural issues, but diplomatically and politically, it's failed miserably. And we have another tweet from Tony Elenius Peter, and I'm going to paraphrase for clarity. He writes, the African Union helps strengthen Africans so they are able to depend on each other rather than ask outsiders for help. Well, now to our comment of the week from Facebook fan Godwin Muya from Lusaka, Zambia. He writes, Africa is enveloped in an environment of uncertainty with little hope for our youth. The economic, social, and political problems faced by many countries could have been resolved by the African Union. The AU is a total disappointment and disaster. The AU and its member countries lack the proper leadership to utilize its resources wisely. Well, let's go to another comment from Facebook fan Jacob Mabur from South Sudan. He writes, the African Union has failed to handle a wave of political turmoil which is spreading across the continent. The AU is being pushed by outsiders to be partial to their interest. Well, as you can tell, most of our comments so far have been critical towards the African Union, but we do have a positive one from Mtanga Obeni from Dodoma, Tanzania. He writes, the African Union plays a significant role in resolving both national and international crises. The AU also supports various integrations like SADC, EAC, and ECOWAS. By supporting those organizations, it creates the opportunity for cooperation among countries. It's extremely important to have the group to monitor and help resolve elections, corruption, politics, and instability. Well, my thanks to everyone who shared their thoughts with us. And a reminder that we appreciate all the audience feedback, so please keep them coming. And if you're a new fan, drop us a line at africatv@voanews.com. Once again, our email address is africatv@voanews.com. Or you can post your comment on our Facebook page. Enter the keywords Straight Talk Africa. interact with our show as it's streaming live, be sure to visit us online at voaafrica.com, or you can join our YouTube channel. Sign up to VOA TV to Africa, and be sure to follow us on Twitter at VOA Shaka. A reminder that the show is streaming live every Wednesday. Go to VOA Straight Talk Africa TV program page on our website, or simply watch us live on your mobile device. Just download the VOA mobile app. Now let's take a look at what's on tap for next week's program. On the next Straight Talk Africa, a look at the life and journey of Mzee Boniface Byanyima, arguably one of Africa's most unique and remarkable teachers. The political icon died on May 16th at age 97. Byanyima was Uganda's longest-serving Democratic Party national chairperson. A discussion on Uganda's political giant on the next Straight Talk Africa. Well, Shaka, as you can tell, there's certainly no shortage of opinions here on social media. Over to you.
Well, thank you very much, Ayen, for sharing with us some social media reaction from the continent. Welcome back to our discussion on the significance of Africa Day. Today's guests are Dr. Arikana Chihombori Kwawo, the African Union Ambassador to the United States, Dr. Awet T. Werde Mikeid, Associate Professor of History at Queen's University, Kingston, Canada, and Dr. Kumi Naidu, Director of Africans Rising Movement, who joins us via Skype from Durban, South Africa. Let me come to you, Naidu. It's not really because I dumped you. And if you feel like that, I hope you'll find some space in your beautiful South African heart. Forgive me for that.
No problem.
Your reaction. You had, of course, the debate right here in the studios. You really think that Rwanda is perhaps the example that we should be talking about here in terms of success stories, or we should be perhaps talking about Botswana, maybe Mauritius?
Well, firstly, I think I agree with the ambassador on some of her observations on Rwanda. I think there have been some very positive things there, especially on gender equality and on certain human development indices. However, I must say, with very strong support from people in our movement, that we believe Africa can continue to celebrate what is talked about as the big men syndrome and the big men leadership kind of idea. So this idea that leaders, however good they are indispensable, is something that I must do with the ambassador very strongly on. One of the campaigns that I am going to propose after the launch of the Africans Rising Movement tomorrow is that we launch a continental-wide campaign called 10 Years is Enough campaign. That is, you know, we got the embarrassing situation where we as a continent have one of the most youthful populations, and we've got leaders who have been there for at least about six leaders, or maybe just less than that, who have been there for more than 30 years. And President Kagame now is on a road of actually extending beyond, you know, 10, 14 years. So we have to break this idea of leaders are indispensable and the whole nation depends on one man. We have to break that idea. That's my first point. The second point is on Agenda 2063 and many of the other proposals and resolutions of the African Union, I would say that the majority of people on the continent actually who have the ability to follow and read through those documents and so on are largely positive. But what our concern is that there is quite a big gap between policy and statements on the one hand and implementation on the other. We find that there are far too many human rights violations, violent elections, and so on, that gets endorsement sometimes by the African Union or their silence on the part of the African Union. One understands the complexity of a organization like the African Union that is made up of member states, and if those member states deliver dictators to you at the African Union level, then it's tough. So I have sympathy with the ambassador and the African Union leadership. But let me raise my third concern that African citizens have about the African Union. We want an African Union that is united, that can push for greater social, economic, and political integration. I mean, I've jokingly been saying for more than a decade now, ever since Europe adopted the euro, if Europe can have a euro, I don't see why Africa can't have an afro. And I wasn't referring to the beautiful hairstyle, just to be clear. I mean, the idea of lifting up our vision of how we can integrate. We are like slaves to the national boundaries that were drawn by colonialists sitting in Berlin, Okay. Let's be blunt about it. It's hard for the ambassador of the African Union to say it. I understand that. But let me just say, most of the countries on our continent, based on the boundaries that colonialism left us with, do not make economic, linguistic, cultural, environmental, or any other sense. Right? We must be brave enough to say that. Right? Doesn't mean that we can negate the idea of nation states. We have to live within that. But let me give you a practical example. If we had a more integrated approach, right? Challenges that the peoples of Africa face, then what we would be doing, for example, when we're thinking about big concentrated solar plants or concentrated wind plants, which we need on the continent, right? We could be thinking about, are the three or four countries that share a boundary where they can pool their resources and so on. Why is intra-African trade restricted as much as it is? We cannot blame colonialism for that. There are many things we can blame the international system for up to today in terms of the way the trade system is stacked against us and so on. But who is saying that we cannot, at the African level, develop a way that our people can trade more easily? There are far too many restrictions to intra-African trade, and I do not... And these are the things that we want much more stronger leadership on the African Union. The last thing I would like to say is who finances the African Union. For African citizens, we want an African Union that we can look at with pride, right? All the member states of the African Union love to criticize civil society organizations and say, oh, you are funded from outside, therefore you are agents of imperialism or foreign interest. If that definition is used for an African Union, then if the only way in which we determine whether people are controlled and every national government are agents of former colonial interests, US and so on. So I would say to the ambassador, we want to hear from the African Union leadership. What is their plan for financial self-sufficiency? If our leaders can find money to buy arms, if President Zuma can find money to build a rural mansion for himself, surely we can find the money to pay our membership fees to the African Union. So I'd like to ask the ambassador, what is the timeline for us to say that the African Union will be fully funded by Africans? And I should say that Africans Rising, we have minimized our dependency right from the get-go for funding. It's more a voluntary-driven movement. And when the Kilimanjaro Declaration was adopted, we said maximum within 5 years, this must be 100% funded by African sources. So I'd love to hear from the ambassador what the thinking is about the question of financial sustainability, because as Africans, this is one thing that gives us no pride to know. And Ambassador, I apologize if I got this wrong, but I believe about 60% of the funding or more for the African Union comes from the European Union and other sources. I apologize if I got the data wrong.
What about that, yes. Madam Ambassador, given that, of course, your beautiful headquarters in Addis Ababa is a present from Beijing?
That's correct. Let me, he touched on a lot of issues that I would like to address. First of all, I do agree with you, Professor Naidu, on the boundaries that were imposed upon us by our colonial masters. And it might also—it's quite refreshing to let you know that the African leaders have committed to melting the boundaries. Regional trade, as well as intercontinental trade, is the only way that we can survive as African countries. So they are fully aware of that, and efforts are underway to encourage regional as well as continental integration. It is a must, and that is the only way Africa can become self-sufficient, one. Secondly, to answer Dr. Naidu's question as to when is the African Union going to be able to sustain itself. Now, beginning January of next year, the African Union is going to impose a 0.2% tax on all the goods coming into Africa. That is more than enough to cover all the expenses of the African Union 100%. So, yes, we are working towards the African Union being self-sufficient, and the African Union must be self-sufficient. There is no reason why we should continue to get in excess of 75% support from the European Union and other organizations. So we are on the right track to being self-sufficient. And so January of next year, we should see ourselves in a different place. Back to continental trade. I was just reading statistics on power. Mm-hmm. If Africa were to connect the existing power lines today, we would increase access to power by at least another 30%, and in the process save billions of dollars by simply connecting the power lines that we have today. Mm. We have countries that are net exporters of power. Why aren't we importing to our fellow Africans? We have countries that are net importers, and yet we're all exporting outside Africa while other countries are importing inside Africa. Mm. The African Union, the leaders are talking. This is the platform through which the leaders are beginning to say, this insanity has got to stop. It makes no sense. We have everything we need as the continent.
But a lot of these countries do not even pay their annual dues.
We're working on it again under the leadership of President Kagame. That situation has improved significantly, believe me.
Do they sincerely know that there is a saying that whoever pays the piper calls the tune?
We are very much aware of that, which is why the push is towards self-sufficiency. The push is towards melting of the borders that are not our borders. And the African Union leaders are in agreement that the only way for Africa to survive is through integration. We don't have a choice. It is just that simple. What better platform do we have than the AU? Let's look at it. Our problems are even deeper. Shaka, you know as much as I do, even here in the United States, try uniting the diaspora organizations. Our problem is the mind. Colonization. Each and every one of us, we need to ask ourselves an honest question. Am I colonized? Because me, if I am colonized, it doesn't matter what position you give me. My thinking is going to be colonized. My voting is going to be colonized. My decision-making process is going to be colonized. So we have to liberate ourselves. The mind is still in shackles.
So if I hear you correctly, basically what you're saying is that first and foremost, we really need fundamental changes in our attitudes and mindsets.
Bingo. Absolutely. Because that is the biggest problem. Even in this country, I was talking to one of the ambassadors. They are diaspora organizations that are sitting on over $100,000 because they cannot agree on how to spend that money.
Because they don't interact.
They don't interact. So if we are having issues interacting in our neighborhoods, mm-hmm, as Africans, mm-hmm, can you imagine what a monstrous task it is to bring together the 55 countries and speak with one voice?
No taxation without representation.
Absolutely.
Very interesting.
So we have issues that we need to address even on an individual basis. And also, because when we look at how difficult it is just for us to loosen the shackles that bind us, the shackles that keep me from getting along with my neighbor and my sister, extrapolate that to the continent. It is no easy task, which is why even at the AU levels, they meet, they discuss, but I can tell you we are heading in the right direction. It is a tall mountain to climb, but we are on the right direction.
Very interesting. Professor, as I crisscross the continent and meet different types of people, there is a feeling, frankly, that the AU, for example, as much as it means very, very well, that in their view, not mine again, it is sort of like a club, really, in their words again, of dictators, like a trade union of dictators, that it does not reflect, or it does not, in fact, represent their concerns. Are you one of those? Do you feel, for example, that you are adequately connected to the African Union?
No.
Why?
I do not feel adequately connected to the African Union. But again, it's a complex picture. To begin with, although colonialism, and I agree with Kumi here, although colonialism has ended, Africa still operates within an international system that it does not fully control. African leaders are not completely free. So while we do hold them and we have to hold them responsible, we also have to account for the constraining structure, international structure that they operate within, mm-hmm. one. Two, we do have to hold our leaders responsible and hold ourselves responsible as well.
You mean make them accountable?
Accountable.
How?
Well, we have to be ready to pay the price for our rights. We have not done as much of a job. And that's why I feel very inspired when I hear initiatives from within the continent, the likes of Africans Rising that Kumi is talking about, is that we are taking the mantle of our destiny. Now, the African Union has a lot of weaknesses, a lot of problems. Each of those problems are something that emerge at the higher level. Many of them also come from individual countries and the blocks. Exactly, reflections in the continents and the
membership. Yeah.
Exactly. So, for example, I don't want to be parochial when we're talking about a big continent. My own country is under United Nations sanctions that have been recommended by the African Union.
Have you ever held a national election in the last 26 years?
No, we have not. That's a huge problem that we have in Eritrea.
Do you have a constitution?
We do not. That's another huge problem that we have in Eritrea that we as citizens have to fight and address. That does not make the African Union a problem. African Union reflects the sum total of these problems, but at the same time, it also reflects the sum total of our initiatives or of our accomplishments, our past, as well as our future. And so that's why we have to raise those important challenges, including the ones that Kumi has been pointing out rightly, as well as understand the context within which we are and celebrate how far we have come, not just agonize over how much we have left to go. So on our Eritrea-Ethiopia issue, for example, we have two neighboring countries. And ironically, African Union has its seat in Addis Ababa. They should have, African leaders and the Union itself, should have taken it as their primary responsibility to resolve this important issue that has been stalemating for
in
the past.
Ethiopia?
Between Eritrea and Ethiopia, the border dispute.
But you know, as well as I do, frankly, that yes, the African Union may have teeth, but the question is, do those teeth in fact bite?
Exactly.
Do they bite?
No.
That's the work that we have to do. That's the distance that we have to march.
And I think that is the issue. You are dealing with an entity that represents the continent, and yet the countries are sovereign nations. So recommendations could come from the AU. Let's look at the situation right now in DRC and the elections. We got a situation in Burundi. Of course, the African Union is leading the discussions to make sure that there are going to be elections in those countries. But at the same time, these are sovereign nations.
Yes.
And so to the best that they can, the AU is playing a pivotal role, trying to bring African solutions to African problems. It is not easy. But I have to say, if you take the issue in Gambia, mm-hmm. that was a perfect example of what type of role the AU is playing in Africa. They're using the same approach in the DRC, in Burundi. So it is a process, it is complicated, but to the best that we can, the AU is our best choice.
You talk about DRC. What about the fact that when you cross the river, you have Congo Brazzaville, which just changed the constitution in order for Sassou Nguesso to become a life president, You have Rwanda, which has done the same. You have Uganda. You have Angola. You go to Equatorial Guinea, where you have the longest, you know, leader, Teodoro Obiang. You have Cameroon. You have all of those places sincerely. And yet, there is something that you have done so well. You do not accept to do business with any country where somebody seizes power through AK-47. Why don't you also make it the same condition that you, as a president, frankly, who swears to defend, protect, and abide by a constitution, you cannot change that constitution for personal or political reasons, really. We do not do business with you. Why don't you do that?
That's precisely what's happening in the DRC. The hope is that that constitution will not be changed and that elections will be held.
So why didn't you do it with Rwanda, with Brazzaville, with Kampala?
Back to what I said, it's a complicated process. The journey of 1,000 miles. This is one step. We have successes in some countries and not so successful in some countries. But in the final analysis, all the leaders agree what should be done in Africa, and we're working towards that. No, I'm in agreement with you. We do need to do better. Some countries need to do better. However, without the African Union, those conversations would otherwise not take place at all.
Thank you. Kumi, you have the last word, and you have 1 minute, please, because we have to go for the obituary.
Kumi, I hope I answered your question.
Yes, you did, and I was encouraged by the financial independence thing. But let me make an appeal, right? I think it's important that while
I'm afraid, Kumi, we cannot hear you. I hope that one of these days I will get in the proper studio.
Oh, I'm so
and
sorry.
You have a show. Well, before we go, I would be remiss if we did not reflect on the passing of Mzee Boniface Byanyima, according to those who knew him very, very closely. Mr. Byanyima was a person of commendable impeccability, remarkable resilience, and above all, one of Uganda's few principled political icons. He died last week in Kampala and was honored with a state funeral and buried at his ancestral home of Ruti, a suburb of Mbarara in southwestern Uganda. Our sincere and profound condolences to his family. Mzee Boniface Byanyima was 97. May his soul rest in eternal peace. On that note, thanks to our distinguished guests, Ambassador Arikana Chihombori Kwawo, Dr. Awet T. Werde Mikael, and Dr. Kumi Naidu, who joined us via Skype from Durban, South Africa. Thanks to our field stations, along with our viewers and listeners, we thank you for tuning in. For many of our Voice of America radio affiliates, Learning English is coming up next. And tomorrow morning, it's Daybreak Africa with James Bate. On behalf of the Voice of America, thanks for tuning into Straight Talk Africa. In the meantime, get better, not bitter, Africa. And please remember to keep the African hopes alive.